This is the Careering into Motherhood podcast with me, Jane Johnson. In each episode this series, I'm interviewing a professional career coach. Now, most coaches come to the world of coaching via somewhere else. No one leaves school or university and says, right, I'm going to go and be a coach. Not a career coach, anyway. And I'm always interested in what people did before, but I'm willing to bet that you would never guess what my guest today used to do before becoming a coach. My guest today is Sarah Smalley. She spent 6 years in the army with the Royal Artillery before leaving in 2006 and going on to have what she describes as a myriad of careers. She is so well qualified to do what she does today, coach and support women going through some sort of career change or pivot. Unassuming and really easy to talk to, Sarah is living proof that variety really is the spice of life. Sarah, it's lovely to have you on the podcast. I guess your background is one that I know absolutely nothing about, and probably it's former career that I would never have gone into because I am not a very ordered type of person. But you spent 6 years, obviously, with the Royal Artillery. How did you get into a career in the army?
Wow. Thank you for having me. This is kind of my first foray into a podcast. So thank you. I feel like I'm in safe hands.
It's not live radio.
Not an obvious career for a girl who decided at 16 that she was going to join the army. I went round a sort of fairly early careers fair at school, and I thought, right, I need to make my mind up what I'm going to do, and explored a couple of options. There was a really charismatic recruiting officer on the army stand who sort of lured me in and talked about sixth form scholarships and university bursaries. And I think my parents went, oh, we're going to spend some time on this stand. And I was just drawn in by, you know, opportunity to travel, all the really great shouts that you get from army marketing, the opportunity to do sport, for adventurous training. And, you know, at the core of it was this, the management and leadership experience that you get at all levels, but particularly if you go through officer training at Sandhurst.
So, and is that where you went?
Yeah. So I sort of signed up for the scholarship scheme and was successful in my application. So I made a commitment at quite a young age that's what I was going to do beyond university. And I never looked back. And that's what I did. So graduated in the July and went to Sandhurst in the September.
And I'm interested, how did you go? How did you fare as a woman in the army?
There were ups and downs. That first initial year of training was the biggest shock to my system because I hadn't done anything military, and I was surrounded by people that had maybe done cadets or had done officer training corps at university. So it was a big old shock. And I think when you're tired and wet, up against it, you learn an awful lot about yourself. And turns out I'm pretty resilient.
you might say that. You spent 6 years in the army. Yes.
And, you know, beyond that initial year, there were ups and downs, challenges along the way. And I think like most roles, you have your really rewarding phases, and then you have those phases where you kind of really question whether you want to be doing what you're doing. But on the whole, it was a great experience. As you say, I spent 6 years and
this is going to sound really dumb, but did you go to battle?
Within that time, I did an operational tour to Northern Ireland. You know, whilst we were artillery, actually, we kind of re-rolled, is the term that they use, into an infantry role, which means, you're on foot. And we deployed to Northern Ireland for 6 months. So this was, early 2000s. And so I was responsible for looking after a platoon of soldiers and, carrying out the various missions and tasks relevant to the tour.
Wow. And I'm intrigued, do you think you naturally have, leadership skills, and or do they, how much does the army train or coach you in that? Because that is the ultimate leadership role.
Yes, to some degree, although I think with time beyond the military, you know, my eyes have been open to the sheer breadth of leadership roles and opportunities that there are beyond the military. But leadership is what the army, the military generally prides itself on. I feel like I came with a certain level of experience, you know, through sport and different activities that I'd been involved with prior to joining the army, and the, you know, the influences that I had growing up. My dad was a kind of standout leader, and the different people you meet along the way, I suppose. But the army almost takes exhibit A, takes you as you are, puts you into their system, which is a, you know, very well rehearsed, practiced system, and they know what they're going to get at the end is of a particular quality.
Yeah. So at what point did you leave the army before you had children? Or
yeah, I did. So at the 6-year point, I suppose all the reasons that that had drawn me to the military, you know, regular changes of role, opportunity to do, you know, really diverse jobs, the ability to travel, relocate, that was starting to wear off, and I wanted more of a say on where I lived, what I did, and I wanted to progress within that role. So then I decided, well, I'm going to go and explore something different and see what's out there. So from the army, I went into a job with the Prince's Scottish Youth Business Trust. So it was an operations role, again, all about relationships and supporting teams of individuals with a very strong purpose, which was supporting young people into enterprise and giving them not only the funding, but the mentoring. It was important for me to do something that felt like it had purpose and intention. So I did, I think, nearly 2 years in that particular role. And I mean, this was maybe a bit of a hangover from the military experience. You constantly rotated, be it on 12, 18 month or 2 year cycles. So whether there was something, you know, underlying in my decision to move, but I ended up then relocating and moving into something quite different, which was supporting service leavers to do, you know, exactly the transition that I had done. That was
really
more from a kind of recruitment perspective, but supporting with interview preparation, CV preparation. Yeah.
Okay. Now I'm starting to see the career coach buzz.
And I think that's where I started, you know, on reflecting later on further down the line. That's where I saw that, yeah, the sort of glimmer of coaching coming through.
Do you think that there is a particular piece of advice or a particular mindset that you take with you? You know, what makes you so adaptable? Maybe you just do it. No, I mean, then you don't have to.
It's almost part of my identity, I think, this ability to reinvent or adapt. None more so, you know, in the kind of 10 years beyond leaving the military, when, you know, as a result of my partner's role, we continued to move and relocate. I think we had 9 houses in 11 years.
So I guess clearly cannot have any fear when you're making these changes, because they're so regular for you, whether it, you know, it's moving house or moving location or changing jobs and so on.
No, the fear is there. The fear is there and the anticipation is there. But I think I identified it's when there are too many unknowns. It's that period from ending one phase to starting another. You feel like you're in limbo. But I think the way that I got around that was to really focus on what I could control, what I could influence, what was within, you know, my gift to impact. And then when you get to a point that you're comfortable with, then, yeah, there is a sense that you have to just go for it. Perhaps it's easy to generalise, but I think perhaps we're a bit conditioned that our careers need to look a particular way. And I mean, that's echoed even more so in the military. You know, you get to this point and you could probably promote, and you get to this point and you're going to promote. But being able to step away from that and start to consider that actually it's the broader picture about life experiences and what am I learning from relocating? What am I learning from that role that I could potentially take into another role, which doesn't necessarily need to be in the same field? I guess thinking more laterally about how your skills and experience can transfer rather than feeling like you have to be constrained within the same sector or the same profession, the same organisation.
I love that. I really do. It's so true. I mean, we were just talking earlier about, I've got this trip coming up and I feel slightly panicked because I haven't got everything all under control. And I don't know if it's certainly got worse for me as I've got older, that I used to be quite laid back and laissez-faire and all this. And now I panic if I haven't got control over things. And I don't know. Yeah, I don't know why that is or what I can do to be less controlling, but it feels out of control, which I suppose I don't like.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think this is the same for lots of people. I did have a little lesson from a client recently who had identified those exact kind of tendencies in themselves. And the way that they sort of remind themselves or help themselves work through that is that whole sort of progress over perfection adage.
Really?
Which can put everything into a bit more perspective, a bit more context, and allow you to step away and, you know, maybe withdraw your focus from having everything exactly right to adopting more of a, it's just about there and it will be okay.
Yeah. So when you talk about progress, actually looking at actually how far, you know, have we come, how far have I come, rather than focusing on the negative, which is, God, it's not all perfect.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, exactly. Looking at, looking more at a career perspective, being able to analyze from a more holistic angle all the skills and experience that you've gathered along the way and thinking, how can I align that with what I want to do next, where my interests lie, what I'm really passionate about, and if the two of those combine, what would my next job look like?
Really interesting. And I think, I don't want to put words in your mouth, obviously I'm not a career coach, but I think a lot of the time that can hold women in particular back, because whether it's going back to work and thinking, oh, but I haven't got, you know, the perfect childcare in place and I haven't got everything at home absolutely perfect, so it's all going to fall apart. So, absolutely. You know, therefore I won't even step off and look at the career ladder. Or, and then in work, how that also translates to us not going for perhaps the promotions or the bigger job because we don't feel that we've got this one we're currently doing absolutely tip-top perfect.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, it's almost a human tendency, isn't it, to really focus in on areas for development, what I could have done better, where I might improve in, rather than giving ourselves the credit for everything that we've learned, all the experience that we've gathered, and focusing more on the value of all of that and the positive impact that it can have going into a new role.
That's a really interesting point, because I think especially at the moment, the point in which we seem to be, just societally, if you look on social media or this kind of thing, on the one hand, we are sold a gazillion stories and products and things around self-improvement. And on the other, we're sold these messages about just accept you for you.
Yes.
And you know, that creates a huge tension.
Yeah, one massive contradiction. Absolutely. And I think it's working on having the confidence to find out exactly what that means for you and trying to step away from these, you know, these overt messages that you refer to and working out what the solution is for you. Because it's probably not going to be the solution that would work for me or you or the next person, but it will be the solution that's right for you.
So can we talk a little bit about the style and the type of coaching that you do? Because clearly this, I can, you know, our listeners can't see you, but I can see, you know, your eyes are lighting up. This is clearly right in your sweet spot. Mm-hmm. So someone comes to you and is a bit harumph about their current situation, whether it's trying to get back to work or wanting a change. Where do you start with your coaching?
Yeah, well, I suppose this links back to how I ended up doing what I'm doing after, you know, sort of 10 plus years of traveling and relocating and reinventing myself into different roles. The wheels stopped turning and we planted ourselves in one part of the country. And I thought, well, here's an opportunity to really explore what I'm going to do with the next stage of my life. So guess what? I worked with a coach. That's why I'm so sold on the impact that coaching can have. And as a result of that experience, that's sort of really shaped how I now work with clients who are ready to sort of reassess their position, I suppose, reassess their situation and question, what do they want next? So we go back to asking some really, well, soul searching or really sort of searching questions around what's important to them. What do you love? What do you enjoy? What are you passionate about? Actually, questions that we rarely stop to ask ourselves unless it's put into our immediate focus. So we start from that and we start to explore what might be of interest, what's piqued their interest, what they get excited about, what they're passionate about. And from that, you start to build a picture of where their motivation lies and potentially what roles, opportunities they might find most satisfying and most fulfilling.
And then you take them on the journey from there, and I'm assuming you're using tools and so on to help work through all of that.
Absolutely. I think once you're able to verbalize your next step, you sort of visualize it and then you can put it into words, then you can start to work out what steps you need to take to get you there, breaking down that process so they can see progress, they can see that they're moving forward towards this, you know, this goal, this role that they've laid out for themselves.
Interesting. So I have one last question, which is around whether you have created your sort of vision of the future and wait, are you there now? Is this the last career evolution for Sarah, or is there another one?
Oh, wow. I feel called out. That's a great question. I never say never, I think. Previous form suggests that, you know, I kind of thrive on variety, but I am, you know, I love what I do and it's so rewarding to be able to support people as they're going through this career change. And, you know, when you see the clarity that they get from our sessions together, that, you know, makes for a really rewarding work. I suppose it's, you know, if I'm sort of projecting forward, it's about trying to support more people in that way. And, you know, what that looks like in terms of business growth, I'm not sure at this stage.
Mm. Well, thank you very much indeed for your time today.
Thanks,
it's been
Jane.
Really interesting. So I bet that conversation wasn't quite what you expected. I really liked Sarah's point about not having life all perfectly planned out and looking at progress rather than perfection. I think that's something that would benefit us all in this world of social media filters and perfect lifestyles. And I love that even now, Sarah has found a career that feels naturally right for her, but she still doesn't rule out further iterations of that career in future. Thank you, as always, for listening. You can find out more about working with Sarah, and there are lots and lots of free coaching resources over on our website, careeringintomotherhood.com. Please, as ever, don't forget to like and leave a review and follow along for next time. Thanks again.